It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 12th of December 2015. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, and it's brought to you with the support of the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua. On Saturday the 12th of December, Jan Velnisseroy talked to Dawn Jeffrey from the Waiheke Resources Trust about the Little Onirua project and their bid to occupy the old Onirua Bowling Club. He talked to Charlie Brown, developer of a new Waiheke app, You Me. He caught up with local musician Aaron Carpenter, and Jan spoke to a media commentator who has attracted the attention of many recently for his comments on Waiheke, David Varia.
Now, yesterday I spoke to the Waiheke Resources Trust manager, Dawn Jeffrey, about what's going on at the Trust. They've had a big year there, and also to answer some criticism from a local blogger who says that funding isn't really being spent as wisely as it could. So I put those questions and others to Dawn Jeffrey, and here's the interview now.
Look, shall we start off by addressing some of this stuff in Jo Holmes's blog that she's put out this week?
Sure. Yep.
In regards to the Waiheke Resources Trust, she's sort of claiming that the $24,000 that's going to be potentially granted by the Waiheke Local Board to the Trust is just going to be sort of, she's saying it's just going to be a waste of money, to make some suggestions and just produce what she says is yet another plan for the Little Onirua stream pollution without actually doing much. I just wanted to get your response to that, really.
Yeah, I think her information, wherever she's got it from, is incorrect. We've just gone through a very lengthy consultation process with the community and the local board and Auckland Council through a group of workshops to create an action plan. So we've actually done that work already. And the money that's being granted by the board is to put those actions into action.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not actually to create another plan at all.
Okay, brilliant. And so let's talk a little bit about the stream then. Where will that money be going? What are the next actions? Where are we looking at now?
Yeah, so the actions that came out of the workshop were created by the people that engaged in the workshops, and they come under kind of three main areas, really. One of them is community education and engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And that will involve things like educational workshops, and we'll be doing two in the next 6 months, and one will be on septic tank health, and very similar to the one that we did earlier in June this year, which was really well received by the community. We had 72 people register. And so we had a full house and really high engagement from the community, and we brought in experts like Craig Brown, who's a wastewater engineer, and offered a lot of really detailed information about septic tank health and how you can keep it working well. It's something that's not talked about enough, and I think particularly when people move to the island, they don't understand what that thing is in their backyard, and it's not really talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something else that we've been advocating for, is more information in that area. For example, on your LIM report when you're looking at buying a property, there's some big gaps there, and so we're working with council to provide more information right from the outset when people buy the property, so they understand what's happening. So we'll be doing a workshop on septic tank health again. That was really successful. And we'll do another one, which will be more around stormwater and water sensitive design, and how that affects, in conjunction with your on-site wastewater systems. And once again, we'll be bringing in the experts in those areas to talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the other areas is working with Tangata Whenua and their roles and interests in the project. We've been talking with Ngāti Poa and also with Piritahi, and what their interests are and how they would like to be involved, which is fantastic. And the third area is the monitoring, evaluation and reporting. And so the council, we've been advocating for them to do some regular water testing, and looks like that's going ahead. So that's testing the E. coli levels.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually know what level the pollution is at, and those tests will be done in the lagoon and then further upstream. So I think there's around seven places. So we managed to get some tests started again earlier this year, and they were shockingly high. One day the E. coli levels was 10 times the safe level. So there is, the pollution is there, and you know, we're working at addressing it.
Yeah. Look, one of Joe's claims was that monitoring water quality, consultation options, and sort of more workshops is just not good enough, and it's been done in the past by council professionals and all that sort of thing. So have you just
It hasn't actually been done in the past like this. This is the first time that there's been a community development angle on mm-hmm. the problem. You know, previously the council have written a lot of reports and investigated the problems, but there hasn't been a project like this which is engaging the community
mm-hmm.
In this way. And there's a lot of interest in this project nationally, a lot of positive interest. And we had a fantastic news yesterday, which is an outcome of the work that we've been doing, and that the mayor has proposed a retrofit extension pilot. So the retrofit your home scheme will incorporate the replacement of septic tanks as well.
Really? Wow.
So that's great news, and that's being offered just for two areas in Auckland, out at the Waitakere Ranges. So we've got the same problem out at the Piha Karikari area, where there's a lot of the homes out there are all on septic tank as well because of their isolation, and their lagoon is polluted. And there is a project out there called the West Coast Lagoons Project, which is looking at the same issues. However, that project is being managed by council, whereas our project has been, it's been more of a bottom-up approach, whereas the trust, which is a community group and a not-for-profit charity, working with the community to engage them and find the solutions.
So how will Waiheke people be able to access that sort of retrofitting?
It's not confirmed yet. The proposal was made at the Finance and Performance Committee meeting yesterday, and now it'll be considered at the governing body meeting on the 17th of December.
Mm-hmm.
Aucklanders will be able to have their say on the proposal during the annual plan consultation,
mm-hmm.
and that runs between February and March, mm-hmm. so people will be able to comment on that. So if it all goes ahead, it just means that one of the huge stumbling blocks for people is that they can't afford to upgrade their system,
mm-hmm.
and you know, that can be quite frightening for somebody that, you know, that has a system that isn't functioning well, that is polluting, but they can't afford to replace it. So it's not a nice position to be in, and so this scheme will be able to support people to upgrade their system. So
is it in a certain catchment around Little Onirua, or where does it, where are the boundaries?
This is a pilot, mm-hmm. and so it'll be Little Onirua, mm-hmm. and out in the West Coast Lagoons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's the beginning. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
What else have you got planned? You've had quite a big year. You've had the compost collective that you've been working on, and you've had a Love Our Wetlands project as well.
Yeah. So the compost systems are sold and really well this year. We've had 3 workshops, and there's probably about another 250 compost systems in around Waiheke now, which is great. We made our own compost systems with using of food grade buckets, and made about 100 bakashi systems, and they're all out in the community now. And bakashi system's fantastic, and it tackles a number of issues that we have here on the island, and one is it's keeping food waste out of the rubbish bin, which food waste in the bin ends up being transported at huge financial and environmental costs all the way to a landfill site in Greater Auckland. So getting the food in the bakashi is great, and then the bakashi creates a byproduct, a liquid in the bottom bin, and that product is like for humans eating yogurt. It's like that in your septic tank. So it helps the effect of microorganisms in your septic tank to function and supports the health of the tank. So it's a wonderful system, the old bakashi. We're down at the Austin Market every Saturday. Well, we have been for a number of years now, and we've been working with Grow and Homegrown Waiheke. Mm-hmm. And we've just in the last few weeks extended our stall, so we've got a bit more space now, and we're just across the path from Grow, and we're still working with Homegrown Waiheke, but this means we've got a bit more space, and we can bring a few more compost systems down and a bit more information on the different projects we're doing, and talk to people about how they can get involved.
Brilliant. And the Beach Ambassadors project, what's that all about?
Yeah, I just actually want to mention also with the market, this year we worked very closely with the market organisers, with Waiheke Community Childcare and Auckland Council, and we were able to get the market running as a zero waste market. So I don't know if you've seen the waste stations down there. We've got 2 waste stations, and we've got volunteers every Saturday.
Yeah, I have indeed. I've been pointed to where to put my rubbish, actually.
So oh, great. Yeah, so that's a huge milestone. It's something that we've been trying to do for years. So it's really exciting, and really fortunate to have passionate people in the community who come along every Saturday. And then we're also very lucky to have a sponsorship with Explore. And so for our volunteers, every time they do a shift on the waste station, they get a free ticket to Auckland with Explore. So it's a nice little thank you to the volunteers. If anybody would like to volunteer, just give us a call.
Mm-hmm.
Always,
mm-hmm.
always interested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good stuff.
Sorry, Beach
Ambassadors.
Yeah, Beach Ambassadors. So that was a project that we did in January this year for the first time, and it's about keeping our public places clean and tidy in a sustainable way during the busy January period where we've got thousands of people on the beach. And it worked really well. It was a new project. We really had to. We started from scratch this time last year when we developed it, and it went really well. And so we're really happy to have given the opportunity to do it again next month. And at the moment, working and interviewing some very impressive young Waiheke youth, and putting together the program for next month again. So have a look on the beaches again. You'll see our beach ambassadors there, ready to help and talk about all sorts of things. So their role really is to support the area by working with the people that are using it. So, for example, we created the barbecue bucket, which is basically a yellow bucket, and it has handy towels, it has cooking oil, it has tongs, and all the cool things that you want to use when you're using a barbecue, but it also has some cleaning equipment as well.
Brilliant.
And so, yeah, so we're actually teaching people how to, or supporting people to use the facilities, but then leave them how they find them. And rather than paying people to come and clean up after other people, we're actually created a model that's much more sustainable. And so the ambassadors arrive in the morning, it's dirty, they give the barbecue a clean, leave the bucket there, and just, you know, approach anybody that's using the barbecue and just say, you know, this is here for you to use and enjoy, and leave it nice for the next person. So yeah, that's worked really well. They also talk to people about pack in, pack out. So people that have arrived by car and turned up for the picnic, just talking about how they can, instead of putting all their rubbish in the bin on the beach, that they can take that home and do their recycling at home, and that just avoids or slows down the bins, you know, overflowing on those really busy days.
Could you get any of them to paddle out on a paddleboard to some of those boats out in Big Ernie Roa and talk to the boaties about not dumping their waste in the harbour?
Yeah, that'd be a great idea. Yeah, I like that idea. That'd be great. Hey, we might have a few health and safety issues there to work it out.
Hey, look, just one last thing. The Ernie Roa Bowling Club at Ellison Park, I understand that you guys would like to get in there. Is that right? And there's just a little bit of fear probably whipped up again by Joe talking about, you know, that once that you're in there, it'll cost you nothing and then you'll charge the public for its use and all that sort of thing. So, I mean, could you just give us a bit of an update on where we're at with that?
Yeah, really interesting. I've actually never spoken to Joe. Mm-hmm. She's never called me. So it's incredible that she gets this information from. The Waiheke Resources Trust would like to open an environment centre on Waiheke.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of the centre would be to support environment groups and support our abilities to work together on projects and increase our capacity, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It will also be a place for education, so for school groups and for the thousands of visitors that flock to Waiheke, and create a place where people can learn about what we're doing and why we're doing it and how they can get involved as well. It'll also be a place that offers resources for environmental groups, so where people can have meetings, where people can work, and where workshops can be run as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been talking with the Hauraki Gulf Conservation Trust and with Forest and Bird, and they're both very interested in partnering and working together and can see a lot of value in that.
Okay, so that was Dawn Jeffrey, the manager of the Waiheke Resources Trust. And I'd just like to add in there that the Waiheke Resources Trust are one of only a number of groups who are vying for use of the bowling club there at Ellison Park, and no decisions have been made yet.
Waiheke Radio.
In the studio with me today, I've got Charlie Brown, who is a long-time local and a really community-spirited sort of guy. He started up a new app called Yumi. And he's here to talk about that. So good morning, Charlie.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for having me up here.
No problem.
It's looking awesome in here, man. I haven't been up to this new space, and it's amazing. I'm so, I guess, proud is the word. Because, you know, come from humble beginnings. And I remember when it first started and it was Waiheke Radio was operating out of a caravan. And now you've got, like, multiple rooms and couple of recording rooms, and yeah, it's looking flash. So yeah, Big ups to everybody who made this happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of hard work being gone. And so look, tell me a little bit more about Yumi. What's this all about, and how did it come about, and how was your involvement?
So basically over the last year I just started getting into app development, and I was quite shocked to find that Waiheke didn't have a fully functioning app. There's one, if you go to the app store, there's an app called Waiheke Island, and I downloaded that, and it had a couple of ACOM options and food options, but it was quite outdated. There's an event section, and there's one event in there from 2013. So I thought, well, obviously this is something that needs to be improved on. And a lot of people who visit places, especially overseas, foreigners coming to New Zealand, the first thing they do when they get to a tourist town, especially, is go straight to the app store and see if there's an app available. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd create one and make it happen. The main vision for it was, because there's a lot of ways you can go about creating an app. Everyone that I talked to said, oh, you should get people to pay for subscriptions and to make it financially viable. And I just knew that would exclude a lot of people. I didn't see the point in creating an app that only had some businesses in it that could afford to pay, because in my mind, you really miss out on the real Waiheke, and you're going to miss out on those little art studios around the place that, don't have a budget.
Yeah.
And so I thought straight from the onset, I was like, nope, I'm going to include everybody on there, and I'm going to make it free to download. And we've managed to keep that vision. And yeah, I'm really excited. I look at it, and I was just showing my wife on the way here. I'm like, look, if you want to see what time the ferry is, you just click this button and then click that button, and then bang, you've got your ferry times. And then you can click another button if you want departing Auckland or departing Waiheke, or if you want to find out what's at the movies, you just click two buttons, and then you've got all your cinema times there. And if you're new to the island and you don't know where it is, just push the directions button, and it shows you a route and opens it up in maps. And so it's a very user-friendly platform. And I'm stoked with how it's coming along.
So have you been going around to local businesses and offering them the chance to get in on the app, or how are they getting involved? And
I've taken a lot of info from Google Places. So just type in a lot of the info is online. Just putting people's, like I go to Google Places and type in Waiheke Island restaurants, and it gives you a list of all the restaurants with all their addresses and stuff and opening hours. And so I've just taken a lot of that info and put it in there. Offered people the chance to list their business by just posting up on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Put a couple of posts on there. If anyone, quite a lot of people have actually added their business from Facebook that I didn't know about. So they're just sending their details to me. All I require was a photo and a short description and opening hours if they're a shop, and email and contact details, that sort of stuff. And yeah, so we're just kind of build from here. Obviously there's going to be a lot of updating. It's going to be a big job,
full-time job. Yeah, I can imagine.
We want to make sure that all the content is relevant. You don't want someone clicking on something and then going all the way out to Onitangi, to a restaurant or something that's closed.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's going to be quite a lot of updating there, and also updating events. And I've got I'm building the Waiheke art map in there, so all the local studios will be in there.
Awesome.
And there's like 30 plus art studios on island. So, and the cool thing about the app too is there's a lot of GPS goodness in there, I guess you can say. So if someone wants to find the closest, well, someone that clicks on the food button and then hits restaurants or cafes, it lists the distance from you.
It's handy.
And it puts the closest one at the top.
Yep.
So straight off the bat, right at the top, you've got your closest restaurant, closest cafe, closest takeaways, closest liquor store. Just focusing on all that user-friendly functionality side to it. There's also links into AT website, so you can click. I've got the bus timetables on there from the Fuller's site. But a lot of people don't know where the closest bus stop is. So there's also an option to link to AT's Auckland Transport website. So you just click a button and then it loads their website into the app. And then you can just click your current destination as your location, and then click where you want to go, and then it, you know, tells you, oh, there's a bus coming at 1:10 p.m. today from this bus stop at this address, and to get there it's a 150-meter walk or something. And so, you know, that makes it really, really easy for tourists.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also wanted to make sure it was a good local resource as well, so there's also like an A to Z directory in there. So it's a trade and services directory, so you can filter out, like, you click the button and opens up all the local directory, and then you just click filter, and you can filter out by, you know, looking for a builder, looking for a painter, printer, and just click that, just scroll down, find printer, click it, and then it just filters them out. And so you can just click on that, click a button and call that person, and gives you their details and that sort of stuff. So it's not just for tourists, it's for locals as well.
How will you promote it to those tourists? Just going back to the tourists, how will they know about it? How will these, have you got any sort of, you know, promotional marketing strategy or?
I'm going to approach Fullers to try and get it on their TVs. I think that's a really powerful resource. Like, they have free Wi-Fi on the boats now, and you know, if you could imagine just the tourists being sitting there watching the TVs, and then this app comes up for it, and then download it for free. Hopefully that will generate quite a lot of downloads. And also some cross promotion opportunities. So I've approached Waiheke Cinema and to see if they can you know, put an ad in, a little 15-second ad just before they play each movie. So yeah, I because I've built the app off my own back, I haven't received a cent for doing it. I'm not charging people to be on it, and it's free to download. There's going to have to be quite a lot of cross promotion to make it viable. So yeah, hopefully work some of those deals out, and also some, like, maybe little ads in the marketplace or Golf News or something might help. So yeah, but a lot of it at the moment is just going to be word of mouth and Facebook, and like I said, just hope that, you know, you've got a lot of tourists that do just go straight to the app store, and mobile usage is just skyrocketing at the moment. Like in 2013, desktop usage still was greater than mobile usage, but in 2014 it switched, and 2015 it skyrocketed even more. So people are using mobiles way more than desktops, and so Apple knows that, and all these, you know, Google, and they all know this, and so they're trying to kind of implement sort of app searching and make it a lot easier than it has been. So instead of having to go to your app, the app store, to download an app, just within your phone, hopefully soon there'll be just searches where you can just type in straight into your phone Waiheke Island, and then you know, the app pops up. There's also a lot of new technology that's happening where people can can preview apps before they download it. So in Google, if you're on your phone and you go and you Google Waiheke Island, they're actually displaying apps now as search results. And so an app could pop up, and you can click the app on your Google in your browser, and then you can choose to preview the app for a minute. So it's this new interactive video technology that allows you to actually look at the app like you're in it for a minute without having to download it, without having to pay for it. You can so that sort of technology is going to make it a lot easier for people to find out about the app. So instead of, you know, in the last 10 years, you go to Google and you type in Waiheke Island and websites pop up, it's going to be apps popping up, and if they're available for that place, and just being able to preview an app for free instantly is going to you know, increase downloads that way as well. So I'm constantly I spend 20 to 30 hours a week just listening to podcasts, app development podcasts, and listening to kind of trends that are changing. And there's a lot of scope to grow and use that technology in your favor. And so
I was gonna ask you, have you built apps before? I mean, because for, you know, kids going to school these days, they learn how to do apps at school, but for guys probably you're my age, it's probably a little less natural. So was it a big learning curve to develop this?
It was. this is my first app, and I knew nothing about it, and I don't know anyone who knows how to build apps. Well, I don't know anyone who's built them before. Mm-hmm. So it was just a matter of looking online and just doing tutorials and, you know, podcasts and stuff. I do have a design background, so I've done a lot of website design, and so there's a lot of coding and stuff involved in that. Mm-hmm. And just graphic design and user interface and that sort of stuff is something I've worked on. I've been doing as a job for the last 15 or so years. A friend of mine, Eric, Billy Fluid, everyone will know him as, he's this last year got into building games, and he's building like a 3D virtual reality game at the moment, and so he definitely inspired me to kind of get in there, because he learned how to do all that stuff from scratch and just taught himself how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of opened my eyes to the possibilities out there for that, you know, technology is making, and he's just sort of gone head first into that. And so that definitely gave me a bit of insight into what's happening around the world. And so I got into he definitely helped me kind of see the potential in it.
Mm-hmm.
And
so the app's being released next week, is it?
Yep.
And how do people get hold of it? Is it Apple Store?
Well, it's the you just type in you can type in Yumi Waiheke. Mm-hmm. So Yumi is Y-O-O-M-E. Mm-hmm. Waiheke into your App Store or Google Play Store, and then it will pop up. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that when you type in Waiheke or Waiheke Island, it will pop up as well. So, we won't know until it's kind of out.
Push it up the rankings a little bit.
And things like good reviews and stuff helps with ranking. So if anyone downloads it and likes it, then definitely try and make the effort to put up a review. It takes a minute or two, and that will definitely help get it out there to people.
And if people want to push their businesses or events through the app, do they just get in touch with you through the app, or how will that work?
There's at the moment it's just email info@yumi.co.nz. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the best way. I've linked up with iSight, and so they're going to help update quite a bit of it and feed me information so we can keep the site updated. Obviously, it's in their best interest to have, like, they have a lot of people coming and asking them little questions, and if they can just forward them onto the app, then that kind of takes care of that person's questions. And so it's in their best interest to keep it updated as well. So they've been really awesome, and we've been kind of working together to try and come up with a plan of attack for keeping all the events in there. And because it's definitely going to take more than just one man beavering away, and because I've built the whole thing just outside of work, and I've got two young kids, one's 3 and one's 6, and so I've been getting up at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning working on it, and then once they're in, go to work, and then once they're in bed about 8 o'clock, then just get straight back to work and keep working on it. So I've been doing some pretty late nights, but hopefully the groundwork is almost done.
It's awesome that you're doing it all for free, because I see you've been involved in the Waiheke community for a long, long time. You've been, chairperson of the Youth Centre. You've been helped form Friends of the Street, Little Day In. You used to have a radio show here. You've always seemed to have a real community sense, and it's good to see you still carrying on.
Yeah, I love Waiheke so much. I love it. So I've been here for 26 years, and I'm going to be buried here. I think the community is awesome. I love the land here. I've got a really deep connection with the land. And, I think just trying my best to kind of hold on to those. You know, when I came here 26 years ago, the island was definitely a different place. Mm-hmm. And so just trying to hold on to those values and those core sort of, those core values that the island had back then. And obviously still tightly wound, and you can see it in the community still. And I just, yeah, I just want, really want to kind of do my best to do what I can. I haven't always been able to give to the community. Like, I spent 6 years just really focusing on my music career and touring all over New Zealand and Australia, and I definitely didn't have much. I mean, doing music full time is you're working like 100 hours a week type thing, you know. I haven't always had the time to give back, but yeah, it's just nice to be able to do something again.
Are you still doing music? You still got to focus on?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I did music for 6 years full time, and it was funny because I spent 15 years of my life working towards that dream, and that was always my goal, you know, to do music full time. And once it happened, and you know, it was awesome, like some awesome, amazing opportunities. I did some massive gigs, and I played at Rhythm and Vines and Homegrown and Coro Gold and Splore, Ragamuffin. I've done like pretty much every big festival in the country, and I've performed with, you know, some of my idols growing up, and I've done remixes and for Lady Six and Shapeshifter and She Hard, worked with just Tiki Tane, done some awesome stuff. But the moment I started doing it for a job, I wanted to go back to doing it as a hobby.
Yeah.
Spent 15 years getting there, and then finally realizing that doing music for a job isn't as kind of glamorous as I mean, there's obviously the glamorous side of it. There's the you know, getting looked after and staying in flash hotels and flying all over the place and pretty much getting paid to party.
Yeah.
But I'm a real artist, and I was not able to. The more popular you get, the more the less artistic and creative you can be, because you've got a fan base who expect a certain thing from you, and then if you don't give them that, then it kind of almost taints your brand, and your fans don't like it. So obviously there are some people that do, but you know, it's just the numbers game. The more people you get into your that like you and follow you, the more people you're going to disappoint when you do something new.
Yeah.
And I've always been about pushing boundaries, and you know, I never stay on the same thing for long at all. If I get bored really quickly, and it always means I'm just always out there just finding people who are doing something fresh, trying to elaborate on that. And so the music that I've always liked and got into is, it's always some sort of, I mean, not to sound, it sounds a bit sort of blowing my own trumpet, but just always ahead of what the public are into. So yeah. I know when I got into drum and bass 18 years ago, and then when people started getting into that, then I was onto got into dubstep, and that was new, and then the dubstep I was making people weren't really into it, and then when they finally caught up and got into that, and then I was onto making trap music, and then when trap got popular, then I'm, you know, onto something else. And so yeah, this new project I'm doing at the moment, it's not Optimus Grime anymore. I'm still doing Optimus Grime gigs, but the new project I'm working on is called The Ancients, and it's me and a local guy called Henry, and we've got a local seamstress, Katia, to create these robes for us. So they're like big flowing druid robes with big hoods and bow sleeves and stuff. And
awesome.
And I'm wearing a like a bird mask, and Henry's got antlers that he got shipped over from the States. And we're making kind of really tribally based music that's quite sort of, it's quite inward. Uh-huh. It's not really hands in the air type thing. And we're focusing on a live performance that we're DJing, but having like live aspect to it, where we have aerial silk acrobats and like fire dancers and dancers having with Isis wings, and kind of and creating like a story behind it, because
a bit more of a performance art sort of performance.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But still, it's still with DJing bass music, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we've been working the last 6 months on creating the show, and we've got like an animation that we've got the top animator in New Zealand working on animation for us, which comes out next week. And we got it voiced. I wrote the story for it, and then we got it voiced by this guy called Scalper. He's from the UK, mm-hmm. and he's got this really dark, like, awesome voice. It's like a movie. He's got like a perfect voice for a movie. And so he's voiced that, and we put that together. We storyboarded the whole thing. And so throughout, the vision is throughout our performance to have all these performing arts things happening, but also tell a story through animation and through storytelling throughout the set. So it's not just the DJ set anymore. It's like a, 15-person performance art piece, and awesome. And we're no longer the center of attention. Mm-hmm. It's we're just playing the backing music for the story that's happening.
Where can we all catch that?
Our first set is at Northern Bass Festival, mm-hmm. up in Mangawhai. Mm-hmm. So we're playing on the 31st of December. So that's the first set. So we've been working 6 months towards that. And then so once we do that, we're going to try and focus on putting a show together in March.
Is that here on the island?
Yeah
cool.
And maybe have it at Artworks, or mm-hmm. try and get, maybe see if Kathy's keen to have it at Kaleidoscope. But yes, it's definitely something different and something unique that we've been working on. Our whole kind of vision with it was, I've been DJing for 22 years, and it's just boring watching DJ after DJ. Yeah, and some of these DJs are boring, and I've got to the point where I'm not that I'm bored with DJing, because I love DJing so much, but I don't make really, when I do my Optimus Grime gigs, I don't make much of an effort. Effort's not the word. I don't feel the urge to kind of outwardly perform while I DJ, because all of my music I play is so inward, and I'd prefer that people just kind of close their eyes on the dance floor, mm-hmm. and find a space by themselves and just kind of go inward with the music that I play. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and so to a lot of people that could be quite boring. I don't really play sort of poppy, happy, like, throw your hands in the air music anymore. I did that while I toured, and and that was part of the thing. I played to 15,000 people, and you have to play that music. Mm-hmm. You have to. You're getting paid really, really good money, and you're playing I played Coral Gold New Year's Eve, 15,000 people, played after Shapeshifter at midnight. So if you could imagine 15,000 people at midnight on New Year's Eve, you don't want to go out there and play really melancholic low music. You have to perform, and that was part of the reason I kind of knew that wasn't for me, because I have such a appreciation with DJing. It's an extension of myself, and so I want to play what I want to play, and that's not the music I wanted to play at that stage in my life. So that's why I thought, okay, what do I want? I want to play awesome, forward-thinking, groundbreaking, inward music. Okay, how do I do that? Well, create this other brand where I get to do that, and wear a mask so I don't have to try and act like I'm trying to be something, and then wear these costumes, and then put myself to the side of the stage and have actual performers doing visually interesting things. Mm-hmm. So then it's not about focusing on me, because it's intense when you've got hundreds or thousands of people just looking at you, and they've had a crappy week. They're in a job that they hate. They want to blow out. They want to go out and have a party, and you're their party. And yep. So many people get upset if the DJ or whoever the performer isn't performing to them. Mm-hmm. And that's understandable, because you pay money to see this person you love. You've seen them before, and they've I've had heaps of people that have seen me 5 or 10 times, and so they've got this idea of how I perform. And then when you don't do that, because you've changed, it might be 5 years later or 10 years later or whatever, and you've kind of changed your vibe, then people get upset. Mm-hmm. So it was an intense thing. So this new project I'm excited about too.
Cool. So what's the name of it again, Charlie?
It's called The Ancients.
The Ancients.
And it's you check out some of the stuff on SoundCloud. Ancients is about ANC IIENTS.
Double I is crucial there. Hey, well, look, thanks very much for coming in today. And, you know, we started off talking about your app. So if people want to download that, it's going to be out next week. That's the Youme app,
yep.
Y-O-O-M-E. You get it on the App Store and also on Google Play. And it'll be promoted around the community pretty heavily, I'm sure, because you've done a great thing in delivering this for free, you know, to support your community. So thanks for coming in. And
thanks for having me.
Talking about your what you're up to these days. And, yeah, cheers.
Cool. Cheers. Thanks. See ya.
Aaron Carpenter and the Revelators are a local band who are doing really, really well at the moment. Just released their EP, The Hardest Thing. Rave reviews all around the country. A lot of airplay on national radio. I think even a station in Baltimore in the States have picked them up. And I spoke to the frontman, Aaron Carpenter, yesterday. Began by asking him how it was to get a little bit of success after a long time working as a musician.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming for me. I've been playing music for 30 years in lots of different bands, so it's a bit of a surprise, and it's quite a nice feeling, definitely, for sure.
This exposure is good for you, but also for Waiheke as well, because there's quite a thriving music scene here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great little music scene in Waiheke. It always kind of has been. I've been here 11 years and when I first came. Yeah, it's been really good. Seems a band come out of this little town, eh?
And how did you all connect with the musicians? Because you've got quite a large band, and a lot of those guys are in other bands. Did you just sort of look around and look for the best guys and girls, or did they sort of gravitate towards you?
It all kind of happened a little bit by accident, because I was asked to put a band together for the Pine Mellon Bay fundraiser, you know, when they had for last year.
Yes.
Down at Bruce's. I work at Bruce's as a property. I look after his property from.
Mm-hmm.
And he approached me and said, "Oh, can you sort out a band? And I want Mervina in it." And I never played with Mervina, and so I rang up everybody that I wanted to play with, like Miles and Derek and Lee, who I haven't played with at that stage. And I said, "Look, I've been asked to put a band together. They've asked for something upbeat. Can we put something together?" And we all met up at the barn up at Bruce's and sort of got to know each other and worked on all these covers to play for that. And then Derek, the guitarist, and myself were sitting up at the barn one day, and he goes, "Have you got any original songs?" And I said, "Shit, man, I've got heaps." And he goes, "Well, why don't you just play them to me?" So I played them to him, and he goes, "Oh, we should record these." And he said, "I'd like Lee, my bass player that I play with." And I said, "Well, Lee gets on really well with Miles, and I like Miles." And so that's how that happened. And then I said, "Well, why don't we go for the full band and have backup singers?" And we had the girls there anyway for practices for the Pine Mellon Bay gig. And yeah, that's basically how it all sort of rolled.
Now, those songs you sort of mentioned, that your originals and that sort of thing, I'd heard that you sort of written them for yourself initially with no sort of plans to put them out there. Was it hard to sort of, you know, put them on the table and give them a bit of sort of further exposure when they'd been quite personal?
Yeah, they weren't, like I said, they were just meant for me to just sort of get over shit that I was going through, and I didn't really even play them at my solo gigs. So when you play them in front of people, even now we played at the Q Theatre last night, and yes, they still are quite tricky to play, because you don't need a crowbar to get into the nitty gritty of those songs. They're pretty simple songs, and from the heart kind of is where I've sort of come from with them. So yeah, a little bit tricky, but at the same time quite satisfying as well, and a lot of closure as well, that the songs are finally got past the bedroom door or the kitchen floor and actually made it onto Spotify and iTunes for sure. A couple of days ago we signed up to Diva. Their agency is an agency that looks after a handful of musicians. They look at Jan Howriegel, started the label, and Rodney Fisher from Good Shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a whole bunch of like Naked Mar, Dave Dobbins, Tom McGlashan, the Top Twins, and so they run basically a booking thing, and they've asked us to come on board if it's okay, and we said yes. So we signed that up last night at the Q Theatre.
Awesome.
So it means, I don't know, as far as, it just means we'll probably skip play with the guys on their roster, I guess, and if someone comes over from overseas and needs a band, they'll give them the list of their roster, and and if they're looking for a country rock band, I guess we might get a chance. If they like the music, they'll get a chance to play support for them.
Awesome. You mentioned that country. Cool. You mentioned that sort of country rock, and yourself here, you've sort of been lumped in with a sort of Americana scene or genre. It's sort of gaining more popularity.
It's kind of weird that we have been locked into the Americana thing, because I didn't really think we were, but. Yeah, I mean, far out. Americana, for me, is any kind of American music. It could be Neil Young, Bob Dylan, you know, anything that comes out of America. So whether it's country sped up with a bit more sort of grit, I don't know. Mm. But it's definitely taken, I don't know, the last few years, Ryan Adams is huge now, and it's definitely a bit more mainstream than it was when I was kind of getting into it. But, yeah, it's weird. There are songs on the EP that are kind of country, but then the album that we're putting out next year, there's quite a lot of hard rock songs on there as well. So
awesome.
It'll be interesting to see what they try and lump us into, what category in that one. But yeah. I said to Derek the other day, I said, if we want to get into the same, you know, brand as Tammy and Marlon Williams and stuff, I mean, we should start writing some more country songs. And he said, well, no, man, you're sort of going into dangerous territory if you start writing songs that get into a category. Mm. So just keep writing the songs you're writing, and then hopefully, you know, that's probably the best way to do it. Don't overthink about it and try and get into a genre just to please reviewers and to get into that label of Americana. So I'm not even worrying about Americana at the moment.
Just making music, yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. Goals for 2016, you mentioned the album. When's that going to be recorded, and when's that coming out, or have you got firm plans?
The goal is to get that out before the Music Awards close off, New Zealand Music Awards. That's what the people at Diva want us to do. They want to have it in the can like a month before that, so it can be submitted into the New Zealand Music Awards. So probably by June next year it'll be all finished.
Awesome. And will you record that here on the island as well, at Pymalan Bay?
Yeah, well, I think we'll just go with what feels right. I think Pymalan Bay suits us because it's a really cool space up there, and we had a good sound guy that came over from town with a van and plugged the whole barn in, and we got on really well with him. And we feel comfortable there, and I find myself personally, if I go to a studio and there's a clock on the wall and it's a sterile environment and you don't know anybody up there, and I don't like that so much. I prefer just doing it like we did it. Yeah, cool. We do that. We've already got 8 songs anyway that we recorded on at the barn. They just haven't been mixed, and I've just written another 3 that we think we'll put on the album as well.
Awesome. And how can people in Waiheke see you? Are you playing over here in the summer? Or do we
we've organised 3 bands to play at Peacock Sky. They're having like a mini festival up there in the first weekend of March. So it's going to be Solomon Cole, who some of the members of that band are in, the Revelators, and myself, and probably get a duo or some sort of acoustic act to start with. So we have 3 bands during the day, so that's all in happening. The posters are printed. Then we're at the Laws, if anyone's over in the city around Christmas, we're up at Lee Sawmill for 2 nights on the 28th and 29th. And then I guess with the Diva stuff kicking off, we just heard last night that the Waratahs are coming over to play at Rangihau at some stage over Christmas, New Year's, and before we do the support for them as well. So.
Awesome. Yeah. Hey, well, thank you very much for your time, and good luck.
And thanks for calling.
No worries.
Yeah, thanks for that.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Now, for those listeners who don't know David Farrier, he's a journalist on TV3 on the Newsworthy program that features late at night. He's come over to Waiheke a few times and been less than impressed with our beautiful island, and he used his platform on TV3 to take a few swipes at us, or at some of the people here anyway, because he's received a fair amount of abuse for his views. When Jeremy Clarkson this week slagged Waiheke off as well, David Farrier saw it as another opportunity to get into us over here. So I gave him a call to find out exactly why he hates this place.
Look, I just wanted to get a little bit of a sense of why you hate Waiheke so much still. I mean, you called it the Demon Island, terrible, a place to maroon, all the worst Auckland is. I just was, you know, what is it about Waiheke that's so terrible?
I think Waiheke is just this place that everyone talks up so much. So when I eventually made it there, I was just expecting it to be the most amazing place ever. And it's got some good points, but I also think it's one of the most incredibly overrated places in New Zealand. And I suppose as I looked more into the island, it just irritated me more and more.
In what ways? What was so annoying about it? The people, the scenery, you know, the...
Yeah, I think I'm a city dweller, and when I get on social media, often a lot of the photos I see of there in Waiheke are just people at wineries, they're taking selfies, the wine glasses are full, they're often choppering in from somewhere, and I think sort of those sort of people that I sort of see turning up, it just makes me think there's got to be somewhere better than this.
What were you expecting from Waiheke when you sort of, you know, read all these reviews that it was such a wonderful place and all the rest of it? What were you really looking for?
Well, I don't know. I guess I was expecting something just so amazing that I'd just be completely blown away. But to me, I suppose, it just seems like a place with... It's just like Hamilton, really. You've got, you know, it's fine. Like, you've got your cafes, you've got some places you can go for a drink, you've got some nice scenery. But the way I was being talked up, I just assume that I'll be completely blown away by the place. But I just think it's overrated.
Right. I mean, it's got to be better than Hamilton. We've got beaches here. We've got, you know, a bit of ecotourism. We've got, you know, I'm pretty sure our coffee's far better than Hamilton.
Yeah, I got to say the environment there, the natural environment, it is pretty beautiful. There's some the beaches are great. So some rolling hills and some forest and, you know, some beautiful wildlife as well.
Did you manage to get out amongst that sort of side of things?
Yeah, I've had a bit of a wander. I think what it must come down to for me, I suppose, is just it's got to be the people, because I guess you've got, obviously not, you've got the old timers that have been there forever, and a lot of, some of them are my friends. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're, I've probably got least of a problem with them. But then, so I guess it's mainly the party crowd that heads over there mm-hmm. every weekend just to get drunk, you know. There's that crowd. But then I suppose once I started writing about sort of my theory that Waiheke's where they maroon all the worst Aucklanders, is kind of the crazy stuff that started circulating around, I think, because I think some of them got posted on a sort of a Facebook group for the island, for people that lived on the island.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the responses I just got were so intense, and people took it so... Because, I mean, my whole idea was just to... I basically wanted to just insult the entire island. Like, you've got to just go the whole hog.
Yeah, for sure.
But the stuff I started getting back from people, it was just... It seemed like there was such a lack of awareness or humour. I just thought, God, maybe I'm actually completely right about this. And everyone on that island is just terrible.
Well, everyone's a bit of a stretch, but look, have you had much support in your campaign from other areas of New Zealand or other friends?
I've had very little support on that. I really do feel like a lone voice. There's been a couple of people that have reached out that have said, look, you've been saying what I've been thinking for years, you know, but just haven't been able to say it yet.
You never know, they might have been locals.
In general, the response has been very negative to my point of view. Some, you know, I go so far to say as maybe I'm wrong if you just read the feedback.
Well, you've got to like, back your views. I mean, it must have been music to your ears this week to hear Jeremy Clarkson advising people not to come here.
Oh, yeah. that was a very puzzling thing, because obviously it's great when a big celebrity comes out and supports your point of view. And I mean, he's huge, you know, he's paid, God, I mean, millions per episode of his TV show. Everyone loves him. But then he's Jeremy Clarkson as well, sort of one of the worst humans on the planet. So, you know, he's sort of a bigoted, racist sort of idiot. And so I was really conflicted, because while I was great that someone was agreeing with me, I was really annoyed that it was him. So it was incredibly problematic. But I don't know. I mean, I look at that story as well, and what wound him up was that a sort of a businessman on the island had sort of just started talking about various demands that Jeremy had allegedly made. And so it all came back to someone on Waiheke just sort of being, I don't know, just not on. You know, he should have kept quiet about his client's requests and that sort of thing, because, you know, he runs a professional business. So maybe it all just came back to a local just having to maybe, you know, not doing the right thing.
Well, you've got a bit of a high profile, well, a higher profile here in New Zealand. If you were sort of marooned over here like Jeremy Clarkson was, what do you reckon your celebrity demand would be? What would you be calling for the chopper to go and fetch?
I'd just be needing a chopper to get me out of there, I've got to be honest.
I really knew you were going to say that, actually.
or some sort of kayak, and I could just kayak away, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, are you going to come over this summer? Are you going to come over and give it another try? I mean, I saw on a couple of your posts you've had some offers of accommodation. Barry from Onatangi.
Yeah, I've got some friends that live over there that have also offered me room to stay in and try it out. I'm open to the idea. I got a couple of sort of "we'll kill you if you ever come over to the island" responses on some of the articles I'd written. So I
really?
Think I have to keep, you know, maybe wear a bit of a cap or sort of some sort of disguise, maybe a fake moustache, something like that. But I'm definitely open to coming over. I'm always open to changing my mind. But I just think I have to be very careful in the way I do it.
Jeez. Good. What would make it a little bit better for you? I mean, is it less people, or it might be better for you to come here in winter when there's less of this sort of party crowd?
I think the people on Waiheke, you just need to get a little bit of a sense of humour and just be a little bit less defensive. You know, I was so surprised at how seriously everyone, I mean, you seem great, I've got to be honest. You seem great. You're not angry. You're an open-minded man. But there was a lot of people that just took stuff so seriously. And I think when someone, I don't know, it's like when someone insults Hamilton or Gore or Waiheke, I think you can't, if someone's sort of insulting an entire island, you probably shouldn't take it too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But people did. Like, people really, passionate people on Waiheke Island. Very passionate. And it's like I'd insulted their newborn child or something.
So lighten up, Waiheke.
They just, you know, they just need to know, look, they think they're in a beautiful place. You know, they're misguided, but they think that, and that's great. And they just need to not take it so seriously. If some idiot entertainment reporter from the mainland wants to insult it, just get on with their lives. Don't worry about it.
So lighten up, Waiheke. That's your message.
Lighten up, Waiheke.
Yeah.
You know you've got a great thing. So just, you know, but you don't need to lash out. You know, take a breath. Go and look at some tuis, and it'll all be okay.
Well, thank you very much, David. I'd like to say good luck on your campaign, but I don't really want to say that. So maybe good luck on finding a different side of Waiheke at some time in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much. In the meantime, I'll be taking my holidays in Hamilton.
Cheers, mate. I appreciate your time.
No worries, brother. All good. And thanks for having a sense of humour. It's all good.
So that was David Farrier, TV3 journalist. He's not such a bad guy after all. He's just having a bit of a laugh. So there's no need for death threats through Facebook or anything like that for him. And in his defence, on an unrelated sort of matter, he's a champion of current affairs in New Zealand and is quite concerned about the lack of current affairs or the lack of funding towards current affairs. So he's not all bad.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onaroa.